Well, Grant, thanks for taking the time to come and speak with us. Now, we've got on the line Grant Campbell, okay, the Raw Aussie Athlete. Now, Grant has been a raw foodist for over 4 years. Is that right, Grant?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. And Grant used raw foods to overcome a history of chronic asthma, allergies, and a host of other undesirable maladies. He's a qualified surf lifesaver, recognised with a bravery award for single-handedly saving the lives of four people. So he's been out there and he's done lots of things. And he said he'd have a bit of a chat with us. And what I originally spoke to him about was that he's just competed in an event, is it Hell's Gate?
Yeah, that's correct. Hellgate Gorge.
Hellgate Gorge, that was it. So I said, if he can give us a bit of an info on how did that race go and the history behind it, just to start it off, is that that's his forte, is ultra marathon trail running. So how did you go with that, Grant?
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing experience. Basically, there's a group of runners called Fat Ass World, which is an offshoot from the Cool Running group in Sydney. And they create unofficial races where you just run. There's no entry fee. Their slogan is something like no aid, no support, no entry fee, something along those lines. And a guy called goes by the name Two Pennies set up this race in 2007. It's a 45-kilometre race through the Blue Mountains that goes near the six-foot track, and he made a 100-kilometre extension, a total of 100 kilometres that goes. So it's the 45-kilometre Hellgate race with an extension out to Canangra Walls and back. So it's called Bouncing Off the Walls, the 100-kilometre version. And a friend and I decided to take on the 100Ks. We were the only two that did the 100K event, and we both did it in Vibram Five Fingers, which was pretty interesting and coincidental, because we didn't know that either of us were going to wear the Five Fingers, and we were the only ones in the race that actually wore them. And it took us 15 hours 40 minutes to do the event. I had no feet issues, no problems at all. I did get a bit of tightness in my glutes because I'd never previously run more than 3 hours in my Five Fingers before. It was pretty rough trails, lots of ups and downs. It's the 45-kilometre section is actually tougher than the 6 foot track, people claim. So it's sort of some of the hardest terrain in the Blue Mountains. It's a beautiful run. Amazing views and just absolutely beautiful scenery. Very enjoyable day.
It's funny when you talk about doing that 15 hours in an enjoyable day. The mind boggles.
Yeah, I've come a long way from the days in high school when I used to run a 3 or 5 kilometre cross country and stop halfway walking red faced with a stitch, now hunched over. Barely able to breathe with asthma, and now I go out for run as far as I can, do a 30-hour race or something. Sometimes it's yesterday I ran around my local lake, 23 kilometres in my fives, did that in just under 5 minute kilometre pace, which was a good experience.
That's great. So how long have you actually been running with minimalist shoes?
I got my Vibram Five Fingers in August last year, 2009.
What model have you got, Grant?
I generally use the KSOs. The keep stands for keep stuff out.
Yeah.
But I've also got a pair of Sprints. Mm-hmm. But the Sprints are actually a slightly the same size. As the case is, the Sprints are slightly smaller. So even though they're a size 48, they're actually a 12 and a quarter instead of a 12 and a half inch shoe. So the KSOs fit my feet perfectly, whereas the Sprints are slightly, you know, they're just a little bit tight. So I don't tend to wear those very often. But I do like I'd like the sprints better if they were slightly bigger.
Well, it's so interesting you say that because I have the sprints myself, and I actually have what they call Morton's toe on my left foot, which means my second toe is a little bit larger than my big toe. Mm. So what happens is that when I, and you're right, the sprints are a little bit tight. So what happens is my second toe gets cramped up in that second toe. And it's actually, what I've actually had to do was to apply heat to it and actually stretch the toe out. So I've got more room in there, which was wow.
and so that actually changed the shoe permanently.
Yes. Like Wow. You would know Barefoot Ted's forum.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually got the idea from a thread in there of basically apply a bit of heat to the bottom of it and just gently pull it out. So that was my modifications to the sprints.
Yeah, interesting. I do tend to if I'm doing a longer run, I do tend to wear the Injinji socks with the shoe. Just it does help a bit with less sort of blisters or like I that 100K Hellgate Gorge race. I had no blisters after the race, and I wore the Injinji socks. There were several. I think we did like four times. We had to get our feet wet crossing rivers, crossing creeks, and just had no feet troubles at all. Whereas if I tend to go completely, you know, not wear the socks, then I do get a little bit of rub. Like yesterday, in the 23-kilometer race run around the local lake, I got a slight blister on one toe, which is completely recovered now, but because I didn't wear any socks. But I think a bit more. If I ran a bit more with them, without socks, I think that'd be fine.
That's interesting because I've never worn socks with these shoes. And what I was going to come back to is that have you tried the Hirashi sandals type of shoe as a runner?
I haven't. There was a third guy that was going to do the 100-kilometer race, Hellgate Gorge race, with us, and he ended up deciding to just do the 45-kilometer version midway through the race. He wore those, and he's been wearing them for a while, and they look awesome. He did stop to have to adjust them a few times because he was getting a rub from the he was using climber's tape for the strapping. And he had to stop to adjust a few spots that were sort of rubbing, just to get it right. But they look great, and I'm very interested in trying that approach.
Yes, well, yeah. I use them to start off. I actually didn't have Vibrance for quite some time. I actually prefer actual barefoot running. I do a lot of trail runs, but what was happening is that I noticed that if you were in any sort of wet conditions, the Hirashis were not very good because you slip and slide in them too much.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think the Vibrams are very good for that. I find that if I do get a bit of movement in the Vibrams if I'm in really wet conditions and not wearing socks, mm-hmm. and the socks help to sort of absorb that a bit. Yeah, actually have a good story. The first time I actually got into barefoot running, there's a website called I think barefooters.org that I read about 3 years ago, and I got all excited about barefooting, having just read through the forum. And so the very next day I went out on a hot summer's day and just started running barefoot, and I was running across hot tar roads and darting across the road and then getting some shelter under the trees and in the shade, and then I, after about a kilometer, I was on a fire trail, and started running along there. And about a kilometre later, I stopped to check my feet. Felt great, and the checked out fine. And then I sort of went, oh, hang on, and I took another look at my feet and brushed a bit of the dust off and realised that I had blood blisters right across the pads of both feet, and every single toe had blood blisters. And I had a 12-hour track race on the central coast of New South Wales called the Coastal Classic at Gosford, and that was 2 days later. So what I did was I spent the next 2 days walking on the sides of my feet because I couldn't on, you know, there were such hot spots, and at the start of that race 2 days later, the ultra runners like Paul Every and guys that have run across Australia and things were looking at my blisters just going, they're the worst blisters that I've ever seen. And what I did was I lanced the blisters from front to back, which is something I'd read about in Dean Karnazes' book, Ultra Marathon Man.
Amazing fella he is.
Yeah, absolutely. Western States, hundreds. He had his blisters lanced front to back, and they filled it with super glue and then stick it back down again and then wraps tape around it. And basically, you know, I did that. I didn't use super glue, but I managed to get some Dermabond, which is a surgical glue. And so I filled it with that, and that stuck the tough skin back to the delicate skin underneath, and all the fluid was out, and it was all stuck down, so it couldn't fill back up with fluid. And it remained a hot spot, but there was no movement there anymore. And when it was tough again, it had the support of the outer tough skin. Mm-hmm. And I was able to run 94 Ks on that with no issue.
What footwear were you wearing?
I was just wearing runners, like Asics standard shoes, mm-hmm. the high heels at that point. And I put tape around my feet as well. But it, you know, I went from not being able to walk on my feet at all to being able to actually run 94 kilometres just by going with that approach. So it's pretty amazing.
Well, thank you, Grant. You've just proved the fact that these ultra marathoners are crazy.
Absolutely.
And you get powered by raw food, so you've got a double banger there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how does that work with you? I was just interested to find out, as you started with your raw foods, what is the main difference you've found in your athletic performance?
Recovery. Recovery has to be the biggest benefit. It's almost instant recovery. I remember, you know, running on a... Even on a cooked vegan diet for a number of years before I went raw, it used to take me like a week to recover from a 100K race before I could even think about running again. I'd be walking around like an old man, and you know, a couple of days after the race, I'd be you know, supporting myself on a table to be able to sit down, and I'd be, you know, when I get out of my car, I'd swing my legs around, and then it'd be a multi-stage movement to get out of my car. And then a hobble across the, you know, to the front door. It was pretty sad. So it was, you know, definitely not a good thing. It was like, taking so long to recover. Whereas now I do a 100K race or so and finish, and I can still do jump squats and no problems at the finish line. And I can go out running, just have one night's sleep, and I can go jogging the next day. You know, I'm a little bit fatigued, but not injured. Like there's not all that sort of that severe muscle soreness that I used to experience on a previous diet. And I think it's just because I'm always hydrated because of the water rich foods I eat, better nourished because of, you know, all the nutrients aren't destroyed by cooking and processing and refining. It's just a win-win situation. So I can just train all year round, go from event to event. I can do 100K races every month if I want to, or you know, probably even more often if I really wanted to.
That does seem to be a common theme amongst raw vegan athletes is that ability to bounce back and to recover very easily.
Yeah, I agree. I've observed it in many other athletes, like Mike Arnstein, for example, just recently, a few weeks back, ran 100 kilometers in the U.S. National Championships in 7.5 hours and just ate oranges, like honey tangerines, I think they were.
Yeah, and he was disappointed with his time.
Oh, yeah. he has high expectations, which is great, and that obviously drives him to success.
That's actually, he was one of those people I was thinking of, that he then speaks that he gets out and runs, you know, sort of the next day without any, as you said, any lasting effects from such a feat. And you've answered a question I was going to put to you, as why do you think that is? And that is back to just good nutrition, being able to get to the body in a highly hydrated state.
Yeah, and obviously sleep is obviously a significant factor as well. So it's the ability to be able to recover, you know, just overnight, ready to go again the next day, rather than having a cumulative sort of degeneracy of, you know, I think a lot of people they don't get injured over time through overtraining. It's more through under-recovering. And I think on any other diet, I think it's not possible to recover, you know, within just basically overnight.
Yeah, and you see that quite a lot. Now, I come from a triathlon background, and you see it all the time that people that, you know, have a full-time job, they've got families, and they're trying to do these training programs that, some are like they're following the pros along almost, but what they don't realize is that the pros actually get a lot more rest because they have time to rest, and they're struggling again with just an ordinary cooked diet. So they're way behind the eight ball, and invariably you'll see, the topic of conversation is, what injury are you getting over?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I train with triathletes. At the moment, I'm in a local triathlon club, and I just see guys getting injured all the time, taking time out. And I just love that I'm always race ready. You know, my goal is to run a 100-mile race when I'm 100.
So, great.
That's what I'm heading towards.
Well, I put out my goal there on a forum that I want to hold the world record for the 5 kilometres masters when I'm 90 years old.
Awesome, awesome. I may be challenging you for that, though.
You're on. So I, working through that, Michael actually brought quite an interesting piece to his conversation when he was talking about a problem that he had was with salt intake. And I was wondering, how do you prepare for your endurance events with, you know, for electrolyte and salt needs?
Yeah, I did read a bit about Michael's stance on salt there. I don't do anywhere near the number of miles that he does per week. So, you know, I can't compare what I do to what he does, but for my needs, I find that just having, you know, regular, like a head of lettuce a day, or just having regular celery and just a generally mineral rich diet through having regular greens in my diet, that more than meets my needs. So that during a race, I find actually don't need to have greens, or, you know, fruit is just sufficient. On a cooked vegan diet, I used to get cramps predictably about 3 hours into a run, maybe 30, 35 Ks, or, you know, 20 miles or so into a run, just predictably every single time. And eventually I figured out if I ate celery before a race and had it regularly during the race, that cramping wouldn't happen. The cramping
so,
of being
so
like,
can I just ask you there, because that was part of another question there that I've got for you. You're saying that you have celery, it's like during the race. So in what form do you take it in?
I, At first, what I was doing was just blending celery, so just having whole celery, and I'd maybe have about like half, like maybe 600 grams of celery, just a large cup of celery before a race, and that would generally be enough. But what I do now is if I take any, I'll just carry some stalks, and sometimes I eat it, and sometimes I don't. But I generally find now, I'm finding that because I have a mineral-rich diet now, that when I'm doing a race, I don't need to consume the greens. So unless I'm doing like 100 mile, then perhaps I'll just take some just in case. But I find even up to 100 kilometers, I don't really need to carry greens anymore.
So what do you actually use for your race nutrition then, Grant?
So, I mean, race nutrition to me is just about replacing what you're using. So highest need is, you know, obviously we need to get oxygen in first, but then our next highest need is water, and then third would be the sugars, and then a distant after that would be the mineral replacement, which I find that I'm, you know, not really needing to do so much these days. So to replace my water and sugar needs, I'll just generally have the juiciest fruits available. So if it's a well-supported race, like when I recently did the 6-foot track in March, which was a race through the Blue Mountains of New South Wales, touted as Australia's toughest off-road marathon, that's really well-supported, and watermelon was available the whole way through. So I ate that, and that worked really well. But most of my races are unsupported, and they're in remote bushland, and I've got a, you know, sometimes I have to carry 100 kilometer, everything I need for a 100 kilometer race, and only water is available to pick up along the way. So in those cases, I can't afford to carry, you know, a few watermelons on my back because they're too heavy. So I'll carry compromise and carry dried fruit. So that may be dried bananas, or it may be a favorite of mine is to carry some like 1 liter bottles, and I'll have maybe 20. Pitted medjool dates in those bottles,
and then good old Datarade,
yeah. And then when I come across some water, maybe a few hours into a race, I'll fill about 3/4 fill the bottle with water, run with it, and it actually blends the dates over about a 30 to 40 minute period, and then I can drink it, and it's just like, yeah, it's the Datarade, the big sort of lolly water drink, sugar water drink. And that's really tastes amazing when you're really feeling the need for some sugar.
And you found that will fuel you enough on a 100K race, say?
I'll do that a few times, so I won't just have 20 dates for the whole thing. I find that over if I'm racing for a whole day, like a 24-hour sort of race. Then I'll have somewhere at least 4,500 calories, but probably up closer maybe to 6,000 calories as a maximum. That's the sort of range. I'm looking somewhere in between 4,500 and 6,000 calories to get me through a day, depending on the conditions and the pace and all that sort of thing.
So you have no GI problems with the fiber going through at all?
Glycemic index, no.
Gastroid.
Oh, gastrointestinal tract. I find everything goes through really well. These days, I don't. The problems I've experienced in the past were there's a 100-mile race in Australia each November called the Great North Walk Hundreds, which typically has very, very hot weather, and people, you know, in the second year of the race, I think 60% of the race dropped out at the 50-kilometre mark, second checkpoint, through heat exhaustion. So I found when I got dehydrated in that race a few times, that then I had, it became undesirable to eat food, difficult to, and that was just through not being hydrated enough. I find if I keep hydrated and then just kind of eat regularly, it all works out really well. I used to overconsume calories early in races, and find that I'd come to a point where I just didn't want to eat for a long time, and so I thought at the time that I was having digestive issues by not feeling the desire to eat, but I eventually realized that I was just overconsuming calories. So now I just kind of eat what I need, and it seems to work out fine.
That's interesting. You say you just, I suppose after these many years, you've just been, you're more and more in tune with what your body is requiring.
Yeah, absolutely. Just always paying attention and just adjusting and just always trying to learn. A good approach to life.
Yeah, look, it is, isn't it? And I was just wondering, we've got the Glasshouse Mountain runs coming up shortly, and they're a 50K races up through the hills up here in Queensland. Do you ever looked at those races?
I have. I've actually looked at the 100-kilometre race, but that's generally when I'm in the US with Doug Graham. So I haven't been able to participate in that. That's generally what is it? Early, is it September? I think, or
that's
early
right,
October?
Right. Yeah.
So when is the 50-kilometre? I would actually be interested in that.
Well, actually, it's I should know because our club is manning the checkpoints, and I think it's in within the next week or so.
Oh, right, wow.
Yeah, I'll have to post that. But, yeah, I know it's pretty soon. They have a bit of a series goes through here. The Glasshouse Mountains, great running conditions, mate. So hopefully we'll see you up here at some stage.
I'd love that. I've spoken to a lot of runners that have done those races, and it's definitely got my interest. It's absolutely on my list of races to do for sure.
Mm. So I'll just go back then with going back into the raw foods side of it. You say you spend a bit of time with Doug Graham these days. What are you actually doing with him?
Yeah, in 2007 was when I first met him, when he came to Australia and ran some events. And then since then, I've been studying his certified lifestyle coaching program and working very closely with him. I did a 29-day water fast with him in Costa Rica. I've been to.
Excuse me, Grant. For those who maybe don't know Doug, would you like just to fill the background in for him and the 8-10-10?
Yeah. So Doug Graham is a lifetime athlete. He was a professional trampolinist and gymnast back in his day. He's trained professional athletes, including Martina Navratilova and Ronnie Grandison, and NBA basketballers and Olympic sprinters and various things. And he promotes a low-fat, raw vegan diet. He refers to as the 80-10-10 diet, which is basically having your calorie intake is at least 80% of your calories coming from carbohydrates in the form of simple carbs from fruit, and then limiting your protein and fat intake to a maximum of 10% each of your calories. And basically it looks like you eat all the fruit you care for and then eat a ton of vegetable matter content. Most of your calories are coming from fruit, but you're probably eating in volume probably a similar amount of vegetable content to the amount of fruit that you're eating.
Yes, that's a great introduction to him. And you're part of his team these days?
Yeah, I've been actually, in addition, while, you know, as part of studying with Doug, I've actually started contributing more and more to his website and started contributing more to his events, getting actively involved in his events. So, for example, during his water fasting event, where he runs an internship program where there's education covering the topic of natural hygiene, which is about meeting all the needs that we as humans require to thrive. Diet is one factor, but, you know, fresh air, water, sunlight, human touch, or, you know, all these factors. I taught a 28-day anatomy and physiology program to the interns there. That was a great experience. So I'm just getting more and more involved in teaching and learning, and really enjoying every moment of it.
I was a little bit disappointed. You've just run your last raw food retreat just a couple of weeks back. Unfortunately, I couldn't attend it. But how did that one go for you?
It was absolutely the best event I've run.
Oh, don't tell me that. Oh no.
ask anyone that attended. Everyone's been saying the same thing. You know, they're all asking, when's the next one? When's the next one? It was great. I actually ran it as a 3-day event for the first time, which definitely worked better than the previous two-day events, because we just had so much more time for educational materials. I had DVDs shown each night, which was quite effective. I hadn't done that before. Everyone got involved hands-on in preparing all the raw food. Everyone got to contribute to making 3 of the meals, a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner. So they go home with the knowledge and experience of how to use all the raw tools and all the things you can do. We had activity, we did yoga, we you know, just had a little bit of running around and doing some good little, you know, bits of fitness balanced in with some amazing discussions. We talked about everything from nutrition and disease to emotions and various things. It was a life-changing event for a lot of the people there.
Oh, that sounds fantastic, because that's actually what is needed here in Australia, is that ability to be able to run events like that. And as you would know yourself, and I'm talking from my experience here, is that during my journey, it was really hard to get the right information and actually find your way through some of the, because you and I both know, Grant, there's a bit of I won't call it division, but there's one way of doing a raw foods diet that I'm particularly on the path with, and that's with Dr. Doug and his methods. And then you've got the so we say gourmet raw and the supplements and the powders. And what we really need is a very down to earth type of teaching that you're doing at the moment. So that's really wonderful to hear. When do you think the next one's going to be on?
Well, I've been telling everyone late November for the next one. I haven't actually set a date yet. There is a possibility that I could run one earlier, but it would possibly be in August. But I haven't committed yet to a date, so I'll have to keep you posted.
Oh, definitely. I really look forward to that. Hopefully, I'm north of you in Queensland. We've got like Clint North Queensland. We've got you just down south. Maybe we'll have to start one in this area of southeast Queensland. So we've got this sort of east coast or area covered, maybe.
Yeah, I've actually been looking at the idea of running, being able to take my retreats more mobile. People have been inquiring about me having one in Melbourne, and I think if I work out the local produce scenarios and find some good venues, I'm sure I could, you know, just jump in my car and, you know, take my retreat in a box, so to speak.
Well, we'll definitely have to talk about that one, Grant.
Yeah.
But would you like, what's your website address there?
It's rawreference.com.
It's raw reference?
Yeah, rawreference.com.
I'll put that in the show notes for everyone. So, all right, Grant. Well, look, thanks very much for spending this time with me. We're just sort of running out of the clock here. It's sort of amazing what you can talk about and the time goes on. But thanks once again, and we'll look forward to hearing some more of your ultra marathon events and to see with your work with spreading the raw food message.
Yeah, thank you very much for the interview, and I look forward to keeping you posted on some exciting results to come.
Okay. Thanks again then, Grant. Bye for now.